friends, and welcome to your Monday morning edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast. How are you, friends? Has your pulse rate slowed to a normal setting yet? Has your heart slowed down? Because mine, I think, peaked at about 150, 160 on Saturday night. What an extraordinary game of football. One of the best I've seen in recent memory. And we're here to talk about it, obviously, in excited, breathy tones this morning. I am Mark Heath. I am your host. And I'm joined by my two best friends, Dr. Stuart Watson and the prospect. We need to come up with, I'm not sure you're still the prospect, Rossi, I've got to be honest, but we need something else, don't we? The hairy one, I'll call you this morning. Stewie, first of all, before we get to the game, you were in Dublin last week, weren't you? So how was the crack?
It was good, yeah. I went with
I'm going to have to throw my phone out the window whenever I call you Stewie.
Airplane mode is your friend.
Shut up.
Jesus Christ.
Dublin was good, thank you very much. Yeah, I went with my old man and my sister. We had a little one-night outing in Dublin. Temple Bar's expensive, isn't it, around that area? But did the touristy thing. Boozy night in Dublin, good fun.
I've never been to Dublin. Would you recommend it?
Yeah, Ross went recently as well, didn't you? Yeah, it's... That's good fun. Lots of live music in the bars. Did the Guinness factory tour in the afternoon. Good fun.
Did you sink multiple pints of Guinness?
I'm going to be, yeah. Is that the plural? No. I need a little break from the black stuff now. But yeah, it was good.
Excellent. Good to have you with us anyway, friend. And I'm sure you were well refreshed ahead of heading to Hull. Rossi, how's things this Monday morning for you?
Very good. Boys, it's mad to think there's only 1 week left of the season hopefully, you know, maybe. But buzzing for it, can't wait. Bring it on.
What an extraordinary game of football it was on Saturday, friends. As I say, one of the best I can remember in recent times. I mean, we've had a lot, obviously, this season to reflect on, but there was something, I think, something about it being close to the end of the season, so much on the line. It just felt exceptional, the game on Saturday. So before we start talking about it, shall we hear first of all from our Lord and Saviour Kieran McKenna, speaking after the game, to Mr. Stuart Watson.
Kieran, some game of football tonight. I think we're all catching our breath after it. How are your emotions?
Yeah, of course it was an emotional game. I thought it was a wonderful game between two good teams. I thought there was so many positives in our performance. I saw so many of the things that, you know, I love about the team, that I love about the club and the way we're going about our business. And that's the business end of the season. There's a lot riding on it, and it's fantastic to be involved. So very proud of the performance. Of course, we feel like we could have got the win out of it. On the other hand, it's a point away from home against a good team with lots of good players and a good coach who were really throwing absolutely everything at it to try and keep their season alive as well. So to come away from home and get a point to, you know, stay undefeated in this last little block, I think there's big positives to take from the night.
Saw your reaction on the replay, stumping the dugout in frustration when the third goal goes in, when you've led three times in a game and the stakes are so high. You've just sort of summed it up there. Feel like an opportunity missed or a point closer to the end goal?
I think we'll always take the positive perspective from it. That puts us to 90 points. We know the significance of that. We know, you know, I'm not sure anyone's ever done that before in the AFL, but got two seasons in a row, 90 points in two different divisions. It's an incredible achievement. Of course, we know what we need from the last two games, and hopefully tonight will prove to be a really, really big point. So, of course, you can look at the game and say that we had the chances to certainly get the fourth goal that would have probably killed the game. On the other hand, we scored two great goals from outside the box. So, you know, we'll take the positives and we'll move on to Tuesday night.
Right. In that 1 minute, 52 seconds of that clip, I've turned Siri off on my phone. So that now should not be a problem going forward. But Stu, do you want to kick us off then with your opening thoughts on this game? We've heard from Kieran there. Clearly, there's multiple talking points around this game. Obviously, since we last spoke, Leeds got thumped, surprisingly, on Friday night, which opened the door and made this game even more exciting. And then Town, as you say there in your chat with Kieran, pegged back three times, end up with a point from a game they maybe would feel that they should have won. But what a game it was. You kick us off. Where do you want to start?
Yeah, I think before we get into the nitty-gritty and the timeline of the match, just the overarching thought is just what an incredible spectacle of football it was. Been saying this for a little while, haven't we, that for all the talk about whether Ipswich can get over the line and get to the Premier League and all of that, there'd be a little bit of sadness to depart the Championship. Ipswich have been away from it for so long, but it's been so fun this season, and we're getting so many games like this. And the reality is, you're not going to get that in the Premier League, certainly not going in your favour as often. So it was just a great game of football. I thought it was refereed really well. The flow of it was great. The ball in time would have been really high as well. There was no huge stoppages, was there? I can only think of a couple, the classic Ipswich tactical one in the first half where Conor Chaplin had a little sit down and the players could go and all get some instructions from McKenna. I think there was one from Hull in the second half from memory, which didn't take too long, but the game just flowed. It was hammer and tongs. It was like a basketball match at times, and the atmosphere was really good as well. I know sometimes we poke a bit of fun at the light shows that certain clubs do, and Hull are one of them. But I thought the build-up to it was really good. You could feel something was in the air. The results had gone Hull's way earlier in the day with West Brom losing, Norwich drawing. So they knew that there was something there for them in this game. Ipswich, obviously, buoyed by the Leeds result. It just made all the ingredients for a fantastic game of football. And we're disappointed that ultimately Ipswich didn't win it, but I think sometimes you have to just, you know, it was one of those days where everyone just sort of stood up and applauded at the end, home and away fans, and just went, what a spectacle, what a game of football we've just watched.
Yeah, and I think you wrote in your verdict piece, didn't you, that it felt like a game that neither side really deserved to lose. It was that sort of game. Rossi, how was it for you, sitting pitch side, you lucky boy? Was it as good for you sitting there as it was for the rest of us watching on?
Yeah, one hell of a game. That's why you love football, don't you? You know, end-to-end stuff, goals galore, atmosphere, fair play to the Tigers. They brought the atmosphere, of course, out of way and was bouncing the whole way through. And I sort of made a rookie mistake in the first half sitting where I sat. But also, it was actually a good thing as well, which I'll get onto in a minute. But in the first half, basically, I don't know why, I went into a spot and I don't like to move. You don't really like to move like when the game's being played. But I sat basically where the linesman was and also where the Sky camera man was when he was going up and down. So I was like, damn it, they're in my way for most of the game. And then also there's a ball boy who's very big for a ball boy. His head was in the way for some of my shots. But the only positive, though, was basically I had Amari Hutchinson down my flank for both the first and the second half. Because obviously when I moved to the second half, you know, basically in front of the town fans, of course, Murray was running down that flank as well. So that is one positive to take from it. But one hell of a game and one to remember.
Excellent. Well, obviously, we'll come on to Omari in due course. Was it definitely a ball boy? Was it a ball man, Rossi? Just a really large child?
Just large child, yeah. I think a lot of these ball boys, with Town, I think they try to mix it up a little bit. But I think with some clubs, I think it's just their academy players, basically. So he's probably just one of the academy players who's very big. He's probably a goalie or maybe just a big
centre-back.
That centre-back, maybe.
Big, so, chunky centre-back. Excellent. Right then. Stu, I'm gonna start from the start, I guess. And
are
the
we
start
allowed to call children chunky? Is that acceptable?
I don't know, mate. You're the
we
parent.
Have.
You're the brush parent. Over it. Brush over it.
Body positive, I think you have to say now, don't you? Stewie, the starters, obviously the first conversation point now. We talked about it on Friday's show and I flippantly said, imagine having George Hurst coming off the bench with 10 minutes left. He's obviously not going to start. Same with Wes Burns. Oh, it's a lovely boost to have on the bench. He probably won't start though. Bit of a risk. But no, George Hurst and Wes Burns both in the starting lineup. So that was the first shock, Stu. And then secondly, they both played really well.
Yeah, the first thing to note here, I think we've got enough body of evidence here to know that a player being put up for pre-match press doesn't normally mean anything. In fact, it's actually starting to point more towards red herring territory because it's happened a few times this season. Kiefer Moore, the man put up for press, maybe a bit of smoke and mirrors from Kieran McKenna. He's done it a few times, put us off the scent with Kiefer Moore being fit to start. Was that the Norwich game that we were talking about him being unlikely to start? And then he did. And yeah, this trumps it really when we saw this team sheet come out. Wes Burns would have been a big enough shock as it was. George Hurst starting. Nobody saw that coming. A man who hadn't kicked a competitive ball since Boxing Day, had undergone surgery only 100 and something days previously, mid-January, I think, when he had surgery on a ruptured hamstring. So to see those two start was a shock. And then as we got our heads around it, you started to think probably a calculated risk worth taking, given the games are running out now. And the way Hull play, they start with a lot of attacking players on the pitch. They leave gaps at the back. It was a counter-attacking opportunity for Ipswich, and having the pace and the powerful running of Hurst and Burns was something that Ipswich needed stylistically for this game. And you'd have to say it paid off.
It certainly did. Should we hear from Kieran first of all about that very process, the thought process of starting Hurst and Burns, and then we can talk a bit more about them.
Does it feel like a calculated risk starting George and Wes tonight, George in particular?
Yeah, we didn't see it as a risk medically, to be honest. I wouldn't play a player no matter what stage of the season if I thought it was a medical risk. He's trained fully for the last 2 weeks, really. He played 45 minutes in a behind-closed-doors game last week. So the biggest challenge was going to be getting the rhythm of a game and a game of this level. And I thought he did a really good job. Of course, he's shown that he can produce big moments and big finishes in big games. And he stepped up and done that again today, and Wes with the assist. So, I think the only challenge was always going to be getting the speed of the game. But the way that Hull, we knew, that would defend man-to-man against us on the top line, the running power, especially those two boys, was always going to be important tonight. And I thought they did a really good job. And the positive thing is I thought they were getting stronger as the game went on. And really, we took them both off to make sure we weren't going into a medical risk. And they both give us a great option now for the next two games. And it's great to have them both available.
So obviously, Rossi, Hurst not only starts, he then scores the opening goal. And you're like, wow, this is incredible. What did you make of their respective displays, and how good was it to see them back?
Yeah, it was fantastic. Yeah, what a big surprise when we saw the team news drop. And I'm sure that gave a lot of buzz around the fan base, you know, seeing, especially, I think there's actually a clip of George Hurst getting off the coach, and there was a massive cheer because they knew he was going to be potentially involved on the bench, but to actually start was amazing. And for Wes and Hurst to link up for the first goal is perfect. What a finish as well. It proves Hurst is just that clinical finisher when he gets in that position. But they just add that extra bit of quality up top, don't they, and connect them with all the players. A massive bonus going to these final two games. But good to see Hurst back and scoring.
I'm going to ask you a serious football analytical question now, Stu. Obviously, it's the first time we've seen Hurst since Moore has been in the building. We've seen plenty of Kiefer Moore. Compare and contrast those two in terms of what Hurst brings that maybe Moore doesn't.
Running in behind, I think he can stretch the game a little bit more. He's a bit more mobile than Kiefer, I think it's fair to say. He gives that press as well. I think he can press centre halves and goalkeepers. A bit more of explosive running from George Hurst, and he's a bit more of an all rounder. He's not maybe as strong in the air as Kiefer. He's not. They've just got different qualities. But George is that all rounder, isn't he? We've heard from Kieran plenty of times that for a man of his size, he's got a good turn of pace. But he can also back in and win flick ons, and he can mix it up between playing on the last shoulder and dropping short into pockets. But I think we saw those qualities in this game. Couple of rusty moments. But not too many, to be honest. He didn't look like a player who'd been out for 4 months. I think he'd played 45 minutes in a behind closed doors practice game the previous weekend. Some reminders of his qualities that Ipswich have missed, I thought. And Wes, likewise as well, he stays high and right. He's got a very specific role in this team that I think impacts on his teammates as well. And as we say, the two of them sort of combined for the opening goal.
Yeah. Rossi, are we sometimes guilty maybe of overlooking just how important Wes Burns is to this team? Because, I mean, clearly a couple of seasons ago, he was basically the team. It won all the awards, scored all the goals, laid on the goals. And obviously, as Town have got more and more successful, he's rightly, and that's what you want to see, become less and less of the main man, and he's now part of the bigger picture. But they flashed up a stat on Sky, and I can't remember what it was off the top of my head, but it basically showed Town's performance with and without Burns in the side. And it was like chalk and cheese with Wes Burns in the side compared to when he's not playing, in terms of wins, in terms of goals, all sorts. So are we sometimes guilty of overlooking just how important he is to Town?
Yeah, I think so, sometimes. Definitely when, you know, because we were used to him playing week in, week out, this is the first time he's had a proper... I know he's had probably a little niggles here and there, but this is the first time we probably didn't have him. He's like missed six games, something like that. So yeah, this is probably the first time we've, like, you know, definitely in the Championship anyway, we've not had him. And he is a key part of the way we play, and obviously his, you know, partnership with, you know, Connor Chaplin and other players around the team, and obviously he does get involved, the assist, the goals himself. So we have missed that, and obviously that pace down that flank, obviously he goes back and defend as well, so we have Leif Davis going running down that flank, left flank, Burns down the right. So yeah, I think we have definitely missed him, and well, showed straight away that he just ran up the whole City defence, and of course got the assist.
Stewie, where do you want to go next? Because obviously, if we're doing it chronologically, now we have to go to the whole first goal, and we have to talk about Hladký and Morsy. And there's a wider conversation I want to have about Hladký as a whole at some point. Do you want to do that, or do you want to stick with the positives? Do you want to start waxing lyrical about Amari, and then we can come back maybe to the negatives? You decide.
I don't mind. Yeah, it's probably best to do it kind of thematically rather than chronologically, because we'll be here all day, won't we, if we go through every single incident. Wait, let's talk about Amari. Let's pause and
do that.
Pay homage to this special young talent who has just blossomed in front of our eyes. We've talked about it over the course of this season. We've kind of documented it, haven't we, from pre-season, where we talked about he looks like a flashy young Premier League talent, but is his decision making going to quite be there? Is his consistency going to be there? And it's just step by step by step he's improved from his, you know, from, was it the Huddersfield game, where he gets manhandled off the deck for an alleged dive, and the teammates rush in to protect him, and he was getting booed throughout that game, but he handled it. I think his first start was the Southampton away game, where it's like a tackle finish to score, and McKenna's telling us that, you know, the first thing I told him in the summer was, you've got to be, you know, top quality off the ball as well. You've got those dynamic qualities to be good defensively as well as offensively. And he seems to have taken that on board. And the biggest thing we're hearing about him is how he's this sponge, how he wants to learn, he wants to soak it all up. And he's got this mindset to improve and improve and improve. And we've seen it. And second half of the season, how many of these big moments has he come up with? And that's where these kind of special players that really hit sort of world-class rarefied air statement, the ones that seem to be able to come up with magic moments just when you need them. And he's in, and you know, another prime example in this game, two goals from outside the box. And, you know, he's really unfortunate to be walking off as a player, not on a winning team.
Yeah, Star Boy is what we call him, and that fits him really well, Rossi. Two brilliant goals. The first goal, I loudly expleted and jumped off my sofa. The missus was away this weekend, so I was watching the footy. I had a pint on the go, little packet of peanuts next to me. I was living the dream, friends. And then Omari whacks that, curls that into the top corner, and I jumped, sprung off the sofa and swore in an excited manner. What was it like actually being there, Rossi? You say he was coming down your flanks. You must have had a brilliant view of that.
Yeah, I probably had the best, well, maybe some other people had best season house, but I was basically right in line with him when he whacked that ball into the corner of the net. And yeah, what a finish from Amari. And it's just been a joy to watch him just run down the flank. He's just got no fear, isn't he? He's just got no fear, just running at defenders. He had the whole City fall back on toast. I've just got that song in my head now, a bit of Whitney Houston, I Want to Dance with Amari.
Nice.
That is a top chant by the Town fans. But yeah, he's just been, as Stu said, it's blossomed into the player he is right now. From pre-season, I remember me and AJ were talking about, because he played against, I think it was it Leipzig or whatever, one of the two, in the Innsbruck Cup, and we were like, there's a few decision making. He's like, come on. But he's really, he's just grown and grown and grown. And he's a confidence. He's a confident boy, isn't he? Because,
Yeah, absolutely.
He's got that lovely bit of, it's a fine line between sort of arrogance and confidence, but yeah. He treads it perfectly. He's just got that really deep-rooted belief in himself that he can, you know, he's a lovely sort of quietly spoken lad when you speak to him. But he had no qualms in a press conference with us earlier in the season with sort of how far do you want to go? What do you think you can do in the game? And it wasn't, well, I think I can, you know, hopefully I can get into Chelsea's team at some stage. He said, I want to be a world-class player.
Mm.
And that's his belief. And he didn't say it in sort of an arrogant, flashy way. I think he, you know, he's prepared to put the work in to get there. He's not going to just rely on this innate talent that he's got. He's, you know, he's prepared to work at it. And I mean, that first goal was just, I watched it back. It had whip, it had dip. It starts over the top of the crossbar. It bends down. It's just, you watch it in slow motion. The standing foot sort of comes off the floor. It's just, it's poetry in motion.
He's electrifying, isn't he? He's the player that when they get the ball, you feel like something might happen, you know, at any time. And obviously then replicated the trick. There's a wonderful bit of commentary. The commentator teed it up perfectly. He said, they haven't learned their lesson. And then there he goes. He just knocks it in again from long range. It's a kind of wider chat, really, Stu. But we might as well have it now because we're talking about Amari. He is, you would say, sort of different gravy. You talk about him and his ability and how far he can go. He's undeniably got to be in the side now. Now, clearly, in this game, Broadhead had a knock. So he started on the left, Burns on the right, Chaplin in the middle. Going forward, and clearly we'll talk about the next two games in greater depth at the end, but say Broadhead's back, Burns is back, you're going to start them too. You have to play Amari. So in that scenario, are we now going to start talking about, well, he starts at the 10 then in that case?
I think the next step for Amari we can all be guilty of it after a performance like that. And it was the same after the Sheffield Wednesday game where we're going, you know, he's a 9-10 out of 10 performance and unbelievable. It's then, I'd say the next step for him is consistency. And he has had some quieter games, and it's easy to forget that there's been a couple of games where we've gone, oh, he didn't really get in that game. He didn't do as much. So, but I do think, you know, when we've seen that we're at a stage of the season now where we need people to step up and deliver big moments, I think Ipswich have got to go with him on Tuesday night. Mm. The discussion around the team on Tuesday, can Wes Burns go again? That'd be a big ask to start another game only a few days later, I would say. Chaplin hasn't been hitting his top heights of late, so there is a discussion there. But, maybe we'll have that conversation the deeper end of this podcast as to who starts on Tuesday night. But in answer to your question, I think Amari Hutchinson has to start that game in whatever role it is.
Mm. Right then, that's a big bit on Amari. Wonderful, wonderful player. Brilliant talent. Shall we talk about the negatives now then, Ross? Because obviously there are a couple of chats around negatives from this game, and that's the goals from Hull. Starting with the first goal, a scenario that we've seen a million times this season. That's literally how Town play. Lagley knocks the ball to Morsy, he turns. Morsy has this brilliant knack, usually, of knowing when he's got time and space to turn and being able to turn quite tightly and then look for the next pass. He's brilliant at that. But in this scenario, this case, Ross, he turns into trouble and it ends up costing Town. And there's lots of gnashing of teeth around, Hladke mainly. Clearly, Morsy was involved. What did you make? It is live by the sword, die by the sword, though, isn't it? If Town are going to play this way, every so often, that kind of thing's going to happen.
Yeah. They still had work to do, though, Hull, didn't they? Still had a little bit of work to do to, you know. But, I will admit, I went, oh, shit. when Morsy lost the ball, and I was like, oh, no. And then, they go and score. But, sometimes it happens, you know. I sometimes get frustrated. I just want to, you know, I'm just that old man. Kick the ball. Get the ball up the field. Because obviously when you're under pressure, just get out. Put it in bloody row Z or whatever. But that's just the way we play. And sometimes it happens. Sometimes we've been lucky, but the players completely missed it. And it's, you know, we're going, okay, that's fine. It happened. Move on. But for them to get equalised in that fashion, it's like, oh, no. But
There was one bit earlier in the game, I think, where Hladký, it was sort of a tighter pass, sort of along, almost rolled it along the byline, and
there
was a sharp intake of breath. And Alex and I looked at each other and I said, that will never not feel nervy. You can't help it. It's human reaction to kind of, you know, react that way. But we don't need to keep saying it, do we? I think somebody put a compilation together on Twitter a little while back of kind of good moments and goals that have led from play that started with Vaz playing that straight pass into Sam's feet on the edge of the box. It's earned Ipswich more points than it's cost them over the course of this season. There's probably been, two or three high-profile sort of big incidents that have led to goals against like that. They're not easy to take at the time, but it happens, as Kieran McKenna says. And, you know, I'd rather Ipswich be this kind of sort of risk versus reward team for years as a fan base. Ipswich Town fans were sort of talking about everything being very pragmatic and safe and not being entertaining and easy on the eye. And the whole be careful what you wish for argument was the kind of the phrase that summed it all up. Well, you know, that works the other way around, isn't it? Be careful what you wish for. Yeah, we can start hoofing it away and trying to avoid mistakes like that, but you don't get all the other good stuff as well.
Yeah. Well, shall we have the wider Vaz conversation now then, Stu? It's inevitable we have to talk about this. So that's the first goal. Yes, you know, frustrating errors, you would say. Then the third goal, we'll skip over the second goal. Again, Town won't be happy with that one, but the third goal is really what's got people talking. And I'm kind of shocked by how much criticism has been aimed at Vaz. I mean, literally the last game against Middlesbrough, we were talking about him making two incredible saves, which kept a share of the points. That
made an incredible save in the first half of this game as well. Where the ref played a really good advantage after Axel kind of wrestled his man down on the edge of the box, and Philogene down the left side of the box, and he's decisive, he's quick off his line, he stays big, he makes a massive save there. So it's easy to forget that. The goal, I saw your tweet that you put out saying you were sort of flabbergasted by the thing, by the criticism of it. I'll be honest, I didn't see it at the time, that goal, because I had my head down. I'll give you an insight there. I had my head down. I said to Alex, how do you look up your old tweets? Because at that stage with Ipswich, which were 3-2 up, I was trying to find the exact wording of the tweet I put out after the Barnsley win last season, which was something along the lines of what a night, what a team, what a season. And I wanted to sort of replicate that on the full-time whistle of this game. So I missed that goal. And then I saw your tweet and I saw it got something like 60 plus responses and all manner of debate. And then eventually I sort of got into the press room and I saw the replay of it. I think I'm with you. I think it's probably a bit harsh, a little bit overboard, the criticism of Vaz. Can he catch it is the first thing that people are saying, because he gets sort of two hands on it. No, I don't think so. It's in the moment, it all happens quite quickly. The bigger debate is whether he can push it into a less dangerous area. I don't know. It's easy to kind of nitpick and look at slow motion replays and all that sort of thing. Maybe he can. I've never been a goalkeeper, so I always find it a bit difficult to kind of, you know, criticise goalkeepers in that respect. But I think any criticism needs to be tempered by what that man has given to the team this season. You know, he's in my top three players of the season for Ipswich Town, no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, watching it, the obviously it ends up going in the back of the net, and watching it live, I was like, that's annoying. And then they show the replay, and the commentator, I think it's Hinchcliffe, says, he should have caught that. And obviously, when you watch it in slow motion, everything slowed down. You're like, But honestly, for me, watching it live, it was like a pure reflex save, which is what he's so good at. And he does what he has to do, which is keep the ball out of the net. That's his first job as a goalkeeper. And then I put that tweet out, and I would say probably 70% of people, maybe 65%, saying, no. He's
I bet if you did that poll now, though, I think that was in its moment. I think when emotions are raw, and I think when that win was kind of, you know, snatched away at the death, sometimes people just need that you know, that scapegoat, someone just to kind of put those emotions
some
on.
Some of the things are extraordinary, though, Stu. League One keeper, he's cost us all season. And you think, what? What? I mean, generally speaking, like this criticism of professional athletes makes me uncomfortable anyway. Like, the level that these guys are at is ridiculous. And there's a, in my sport, the sport of fighting, there's a great meme of a guy, big, large lad, sat on the sofa, pint of beer in his hand, covered in crisps all down him, and the wording, I'd just knocked him out, easy. And that kind of, for me, sums up the frustration with mere mortals like us criticising this level of athlete. I don't think you fully appreciate how good these guys are.
It's something I wrestle with, because ultimately that is kind of our profession as well. And it's really difficult. And, you know, so over the years, I've had exchanges with players along those lines of, you know, the first thing when it comes to player ratings and things like that is, you know, you haven't kicked a ball in your life. And that's fair. It's fair cop, because if somebody was picking our job to pieces within a few minutes of a final whistle and you go, well, you know, you've give it a go yourself, that sort of thing. So, but also similarly, it's entertainment business. It's, you know, people pay their money. They're invested in their team emotionally. It comes with the job, isn't it? And doesn't mean, you know, similarly, we talk about if a tradesman came around your house and did a job and they bodged it, doesn't mean that just because you can't do it, you haven't got a right to kind of critique the work as well. So it's a fine balancing act. But we've delved deep into whether professional athletes should be sort of open to criticism or not. But I think some of that criticism of Vaz was a little OTT for that goal. Yeah. But there's other elements, as always with these goals, there's other elements beyond just the goalkeeper part at the end. It's giving away the free kick. It's not winning the header at the far post. The second whole goal, while we're kind of on that subject, stop the cross. I always kind of think quite often people look at should the man in the box been marked? Stop the cross and you don't have to deal with that situation in the first place. I think maybe Leif Davis needed to get out to his man a little bit quicker. Should someone be able to run across both centre halves and score at the near post? Again, maybe nitpicking a little bit, but McKenna's sort of verdict was he was okay with the first goal, but the two second goals less so. He's definitely frustrated with those.
Mm. Ross, any thoughts on the Hladky debate? We've said there clearly he's been massively important for Town this season. Has saved them on numerous occasions. Were you slightly surprised by the kind of reaction to Saturday?
No, because football fans. we're all football fans here, but. Yeah, it's the heat in the moment, isn't it? And I think, obviously, it was such a big, you know, if we won that, we knew it was only one win away. Well, technically, we're still only one win away, really. But at that point, I think everyone was just like, no, we've like blown it, you know. But yeah, it's just one of those. Yeah, but maybe it should have done a bit better. Maybe it should have pushed it out of the danger zone a bit more. But just one of those moments. But Vaz has been unbelievable. Like, once again, just like the position Town are in, no one thought Vaz was going to be the first choice goalie in the Championship. He was second choice last year to Walton. He played a few cup games, maybe played one or two league games. But Sunderland away, opening day, he made some incredible saves and he's gone on to basically have an unbelievable highlight reel of amazing saves. So I'm not saying, you know, he doesn't deserve to get criticism, because obviously he has had a few moments this season in terms of, you know, letting goals in, maybe, you know, little bad moments. But overall, he's been unbelievable and it's just one of those days where we pushed it out and their striker was there to score.
Yeah, it's a strange one. It's kind of expanding on the my nan could have scored that debate, isn't it, Stewie? Clearly, professional athletes have to be open to criticism, but I think it's that minutiae, that absolute assertion that I should just caught it dead easy, mate. That kind of it sits uneasily with me. Anyway, shall we move on? Something else that was sitting uneasily, Stu, was Kieran McKenna when that goal went in. The most angry I've ever seen him. Went to town, my friend, on that Perspex dugout. Completely, you know, unprecedented, really, emotion from McKenna. What did you make of that? Because I actually sent the clip to you. I was that staggered.
Yeah. He's most animated we've seen him on the touchline, without doubt. I think that shows you where we're at with the stakes being so high at this stage of the season. He knows his team were so close. So, yeah, he's not a complete robot. We know he's cool, calm, collected, but 3 minutes away from getting a win that would have, you know, we'd be talking now if Ipswich had seen that over the line about almost having not one foot in the Premier League, but certainly sort of having a couple of toes over the line. So I think, like all of us, you know, it's in that moment, emotions are high, but some people are quite good at them moving on from that quicker than others. Some people it might take 5 minutes to get out of their system. Some people it might take an hour or go to sleep and wake up the next day feeling a bit better. And, you know, as you heard there, by the time Kieran McKenna came in for his press conference, what, half an hour or so later, already he'd kind of got it straight in his mind that, okay, great game of football, could have won it, didn't win it, but the overall picture is Ipswich need 4 points from their final two games.
Yeah, Rossi, so they ended up drawing, and the nature of the draw is one of those classic, it feels like a defeat. But the main thing Town had to do on Saturday was to avoid defeat before the game. Just don't get beaten. Get a point, on you go. You know, five to get to the Premier League, take a point. Hull got loads to play for, good side, take a point. So coming away from it, does it feel to you like a point gained rather than two lost?
Yeah, away point, always a good point, isn't it? The cliche. I think there was a lot of obviously deflation after the Borough game because obviously, you know, we only drew against Borough at home, but this one feels very different because of the game itself, because it was end to end. You know, I think Stu used the word breathless. It was so. I think it was a point gained because just how the game panned out, and just probably one of the best games I've ever seen live. There's been a few, you know, we've seen under Kieran McKenna, but for it to be end-to-end. Of course, Hull just chucked on all their strikers. Liam Rossini just looked and went, "You're a striker, get on. You're a striker, get on. No, you're a defender. Don't need you, mate." And it was just unbelievable. And obviously, Town, they worked their asses off, as they normally do. Just when Amari did score that third goal, though, I just felt, come on, hopefully we can keep hold of this. And let's find that. We needed that fourth goal. We really need that fourth goal, but didn't.
I think that might be the bigger criticism. And I hate using the word criticism here because we're waxing lyrical about incredible game of football, an incredible team that are in an incredible position. But there's been a lot of kind of pulling apart of the goals against, understandably. But I think the missed opportunity was, as Ross says, they were chucking on all their strikers, throwing the kitchen sink at Ipswich, leaving gaps at the back. And there was chances for Ipswich to kill this off.
I thought they had right at the end.
I mean, we'll come on to that one. That was even when it went to 3-3. How the ball, that was one of those sort of slow motion moments. We were up sort of in the gods, and sometimes it's difficult to kind of judge the angle and the flight of the ball, but it looked destined to fall to Sarmiento, didn't it, at the far post, and it just didn't quite land for him, and they were chucking bodies in the way.
Like that.
Yeah.
Then it rebounds to Morsey. You're like, he's got, oh no.
I know. And that was at 3-3, but even at 3-2, Sarmiento had a couple of chances, didn't he? I mean, their goalkeepers, Paul, I don't know how many saves he's made in the game as well. Taylor came on and made a big deal. You know, I thought he freshened
Burgess
him up when
the crossbar,
he came. Burgess crossbar. Yeah. So, look, ultimately, I kind of, when I reflected on it all, a mad game of football, as we said at the start, that maybe neither team deserved to lose in, you know, when all things said and done. Ipswich seemed to be better when they weren't winning the game. If you look at their best spells in this match was when they were kind of level or having to get themselves back in front. But I very quickly, I kind of felt that it was another point towards the total. Hull are a team fully motivated that have been in some good form recently, that have got some good players, a good manager, had the crowd behind them. To ultimately come away with a point, I think, is a good thing. We've barely touched on it. The Leeds result at QPR, 4-0 on Friday night. Could you see Ipswich Town losing in that manner? They've lost six games all season.
I don't want to tempt fate by saying no, but no.
Yeah, they've lost six games all season, and that might ultimately be their super strength in amongst all this. We talked about how many goals they score, how good they are at winning games. Not losing is just as good a quality. And these points along the way, you know, it's going to come down to one or two points. And we talked about it, how big are those VAS saves against Middlesbrough going to prove to be, and various scenarios like that along the way. So, yeah, good point for me. Another one, every point's a prisoner. Put it in your pocket, move on.
Yeah, just a few other notes from me. I'm really impressed with Liam Rowe Senior. Really like Liam Rowe Senior. He speaks so well, obviously, clearly, like very much in the McKenna mould. And I very much enjoyed watching Hull play. And onto that point you just mentioned, Stu, it was actually echoed by your mate Luke Chambers on the telly after the game when they're talking about, obviously, he was asked if he thought Town were going to get over the line. And he said, essentially, I think they will. But one of the things he mentioned was the fact they don't lose games. And that's a huge strength for them. That they, even when they're playing badly, they generally don't lose. So in a scenario where they need 4 points from two games, that kind of unlikely scenario that they lose a game, you know, it's a strength for them. So before we move on, shall we hear...
You talk about them not playing well. That's another thing for me, is that it's the consistency of performances. And McKenna always talks about the process. And if you focus on performances, then ultimately the points kind of look after themselves. And my fear about this was the kind of two-week break going into the game. And we've seen it over many years that Ipswich always seem to be fairly sluggish after the international break. And it might take them 20 minutes to get going. And two players coming back from absences and all of that. There was no signs of that, was there, in terms of rustiness. So the performance, you know, I think they're playing okay. Norwich was a poor performance. There's no getting away from that. But Watford, Middlesbrough, disappointing results in the end, but, you know, performed okay. This was certainly a good performance. So I don't think it's like you're hearing about, I haven't watched every minute of Leeds and Southampton, etc. But the noise coming from those camps is that they're playing with a bit of anxiety, not playing well at times. Ipswich, I think they're playing okay. And, you know, they're just playing like they have done all season. People keep asking me about, from the outside looking in, what happened over Christmas time with Ipswich? I don't think they were... Their performance levels have never drastically dipped over a consistent period. Even when the results dried up a bit over Christmas, thought they were performing okay. So their consistency, their ability to not lose games is not to be overlooked.
Right then, let's hear from Massimo Longo, one of the players obviously playing in the game, about what he made of it, and then we can put the cap on this and move on to the rest of this week, boys, because it's an absolutely gigantic week in the history of Ipswich Town Football Club. Let's hear from Massimo first of all.
Mass, were you expecting a game like that? You would have seen what Hull are like, you know, the goals they've been scoring. You're kind of expecting a bit of an open end to end on?
Yeah, for sure. I think we saw their lineup. We kind of expected, you know, kind of four strong attacking players. And then half time came and they put another body up there, so they had five attacking players, you know, one midfielder, three behind that. Yeah, so it was... I think we knew it was going to be a different team to when we played them at home. So, credit to them. They're a good team. They're a really good team. Really good team.
Just a word for the fans as well. It was always going to be a big sellout. It was always going to be a big occasion. But the way that they are cheering and trying to push you over the line.
Yeah, I think they appreciate the effort that we're giving. You can see in the way, you know, they're so loud. And at the end of the game, they're right behind us. And credit to them. They're always amazing, to be fair. Sometimes you forget to acknowledge it, but they were really good today. And we need them. We've needed them all season. They've been there, so no doubt they'll be there for the next one.
AJ there interviewing Massimo Longo to the backing of Spandau Ballet. Can we have more player interviews with backing tracks? AJ, of course, difficult conversation. He has been fired since Friday's gross insubordination on the podcast, where he suggested several times, took shots at me. Very poor form from AJ. So he's no longer with us. Sad. But let's move on, shall we? anything else to mention from this game, Rossi? I, behind the scenes point of view, AJ was very excited about the food. Are you able to talk to us about this in any great detail? When he put the picture on, it looked like basically a big bowl of carbs. It was carbs on carbs on carbs. But I'm led to believe it was chicken katsu. Did you sample it? Can you wax lyrical about it?
Yeah, I also had carbs before going to the game. I actually went and got some pasta at Ask. Other Italian restaurants are available, of course. So I had that. And then when we arrived, I was like, oh no, I've got more carbs, basically. Because obviously, yeah, chicken, but also you've got the chips involved, a bit of rice. Although
chips
I didn't eat
rice.
It all.
That's mad.
Yeah, it's mad. I didn't eat it all, though, because I was just stuffed. But it was nice. It was nice. So Hull, they're probably up there to do. I saw he's demolished his.
It was all right, yeah, but it's judged against kind of usual football stadium food standards, which is normally sort of questionable pie slash hot dog. It was good, yeah. Anything in a bowl always tastes good, wasn't it? It was in like a little, yeah, on a little bowl.
It was a quite a fancy bowl, like a artisanal style bowl you might get at a food fair. So that, I think that. Obviously, eat with your eyes, don't you? So presentation's important in that regard. Stuart, anything else from you before we move on to the rest of this this week? Well, mainly Coventry, let's be honest.
What else is there to say around this game? Not a lot, really. Just I sort of echo the thoughts of you guys, really. I can't remember a sort of a more entertaining game of football. I imagine if you tuned in as a neutral, you wouldn't be switching off from that, would you? It would have been fantastic Saturday evening entertainment. Yeah, just a shame that Ipswich weren't quite able to edge it. But, yes, a point gain for me still.
It's one of those games where, obviously, I was having a couple of beers when I was drinking it, and inevitably, as you get excited about the football, the bladder starts to swell. Mm-hmm. It's one of those where you're thinking, I can't go to the toilet now, and I might miss something. So it's one of these, is it worth wetting myself for this football game? So, and yes, it was.
Well, imagine being in the press box and actually doing live updates and match reports and all that sort of thing. That's I've been in that scenario many times over the years where I've maybe hydrated a bit too much on the journey there.
Yeah.
Haven't actually had to commit said no, crime yet.
No. But I would say, you know, if it was a poster of this game worth wetting yourself for, I would say would be right up there. Moves us on perfectly to the next game then, Stu. Another game potentially worth wetting yourself for is Coventry away. Now, Coventry and Huddersfield, pretty much nothing to play for. Well, Coventry definitely nothing to play for. Huddersfield effectively relegated. So there's that conversation around that game to begin with. And then obviously around what you do with the town side. We know what they need, and it's a beautiful thing. They need 4 points from 2 games, Stu.
Yeah. So first debate. Yep. Let me become questioner for a moment.
Yes.
Flip it to you.
Yeah.
Would you take a point now? Yes or no?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The key thing is they don't lose. A draw is fine. They just can't lose, because if they lose, then we're in a situation where on the final day, we're depending on Leeds, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
Stuffing up against the Southampton side, who have been awful. Just fallen apart completely.
Can't be relying on Southampton to do us any favours at the moment.
No. So, yes, absolutely, I would take a point. Right now, I wouldn't even get on the bus, to quote Mick McCarthy.
Mm.
But, yeah, I mean, shall we start with Coventry, first of all? Because I was in conference this morning with my friends from across the various parts of this business, and it was like, well, Coventry haven't got anything to play for. Easy win. And there is that argument, isn't there? But equally, not having anything to play for sometimes leads to sides not having the shackles on them and playing beautiful flying football. We know Coventry clearly are a very good football side.
Yeah, I don't always put too much stock in that kind of nothing to play for, and because I think it's a little bit different with Coventry. This will be their fourth game in 10 days, one of which was the epic FA Cup semi-final against Manchester United, which will have sapped a lot of energy from them, both physically and mentally, especially with the way they felt kind of robbed at the death of a chance of that takes a lot of time to get that out your system as a player, that you were that close to playing in an FA Cup final. I think they've got one of the smallest squads, have used fewer players than most in the division this year. Sounds like some of the league performances either side of that FA Cup game have been pretty flat. The Birmingham one, they lost 3-0 just leading up to Man United. Mark Robbins was not happy with that at all, talking about, I could have taken off all of them at half-time if I could. Sounds like they've been a little bit leggy since that Manchester United game as well. They've got some injury issues as well. Ben Sheaf, a central midfielder that I really like. He missed out at the weekend. Sounds like he's a major doubt. Liam Kitchen, centre-half, straight red card. So he's suspended as well. A little bit light at centre-half by the sounds of things. So it all points towards Ipswich having a, inverted commas, easier game than the one on Saturday against Hull. But obviously on the flip side of that, Ipswich, having been off for 2 weeks, have now got themselves going again after a long trip to Hull, and everything that they've put into that game against Hull will have taken a fair chunk out of them as well. So there's no easy games in the Championship. It's a fool's errand to try and sort of predict whether certain fixtures are going to be easier than others. But I have to admit, I don't mind the look of this as a follow-up game for Ipswich going to Coventry. It's not even their final home game of the season. So it's not like, let's finish the season on a bit of a high and give our fans something to kind of applaud for the lap of appreciation, because they come back to Coventry on Saturday as well. So it's an opportunity. It's definitely an opportunity for Ipswich here. Right. And for all the talk about taking a draw, they'll go and attack it, and they'll want to get 3 points because Huddersfield, yes, there'll be massive favourites to win that game. Huddersfield are effectively relegated now, but we've seen how awkward opposition Huddersfield can be, and there could be, there's a slight fear that if they do draw against Coventry, it's a bit like the pressure to win, the expectation to win would be so high going into that game at Portman Road, and to have that little buffer of only, inverted commas, needing a point would be lovely, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think that was the other thing I enjoyed about Saturday, actually reflecting on it, was the fact that at no point did it look like either side were just going to settle for a draw. They were both trying to win at all times, which sounds nonsense. Clearly, they were trying to win. But in a game like that where a draw suited both sides, it's not always the case, is it? Right then, should we hear from Kieran McKenna about the last two games and we could talk a bit more about them?
Two games left, 4 points needed. It's a big, big few days ahead.
Yeah, of course it is. Every game's been a big game for I don't know how long now, and I think you can see the effort we've put into every game. So, you know, Tuesday night won't be any different. Tonight wasn't any different. I know the players will give their all. I think we're playing well. I think we're performing well. We're doing a lot of good things as a team. I think you can see the team aren't playing with, you know, a great deal of anxiety or anything like that. I think they're enjoying the matches, enjoying the stage of the season and where we're at. Of course, the games are hard and they're tight because of the level we're operating at and the step up we've made. But we're enjoying it. So, what a wonderful position to be in. What a great game to look forward to on Tuesday night. And, you know, we know whatever happens now, we're going to go back to Portman Road on Saturday morning in contention for, you know, automatic promotion to the Premier League. What a wonderful, you know, thing to be involved in. And we'll embrace that. But most importantly, we'll recover and prepare to try and deliver a performance on Tuesday.
Yeah, just reflect, friends. If I'd have played that clip to you at the start of the season and said, this is Kieran McKenna speaking with two games left, and he'd have said, we've got two games left and we know on Saturday we're going to be playing for promotion to the Premier League, you'd have gone, what? How have you doctored that? Have you used AI to set that up? Because that's never going to be the case. So A, that's wonderful. B, it's obviously a year today since they actually were promoted from League One, that incredible day against Exeter. And now we're talking about potentially another of those days coming up on Saturday. We've talked about Coventry a little bit there, Rossi, and I think Robbins has said something along the lines of he might have to play the youngsters in the last couple of games, which, you know, sounds good from a Town point of view. But clearly it's all about Town. So shall we talk a little bit about Town? One thing we haven't mentioned, of course, from the whole game was the other negative, which is Leif Davis limping off with 8 minutes left. I think Kieran said after the game, he's rolled his ankle. It was a non-contact thing off the ball, which always makes you worry that he's done his knee or something horrendous. So I was quite pleased, actually, when he said it was just a rolled ankle. But is there anything you would do, Ross, in terms of the side? And if Leif can't play, are we just sticking Harry Clark out there like he came on Saturday?
Shit, I didn't actually think of that. Yeah, because Davis obviously is such a key.
18 assists now. Mad. 18. Three more than anyone else in the Championship. That's mental.
Unbelievable. So yeah, it will be a big miss if he's not available on Tuesday. So you may have to put Harry Clark there, because who else can go left.
Well, Cameron Humphreys, I suppose.
Yeah, true, but
that's a big game for a young man to step into.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. Obviously, we already spoke about. You don't start Wes Burns and George Hurst again, do you?
I wouldn't have thought they'd start on Saturday. I mean, the obvious thing is you maybe go with Moore for this game and then bring Hurst back for the big one at home. But who knows? I mean, they're so important. Certainly Burns as well. What would you do, Stu?
The thing is, I think out of the two games, again, we talked about the style of Hull away being more suited to Burns and Hurst and counter-attack opportunities and more space. Out of these two games, Coventry is the one that you probably want these two for more than Huddersfield, but it comes 4 days off the back of an 8 p.m. kickoff at Hull on the road again. So I think there's going to be a big, big decision to make on those two. I guess they're going to have to see what they're like medically. They'll make their assessments and I can see this being one that they make some late decisions on, possibly.
What about the Leif Davis conundrum, Stu? Is it just Harry Clark? If Leif can't play, is Harry Clark just in there?
I think so. You're right to kind of highlight Cameron Humphreys as an option because he has played a bit of left back. He gives that more left-footed balance. He's got, I think he's ultra fit like Leif Davis, so he can kind of replicate that up and down play, and he can reverse those kind of passes back into the box like Leif Davis does. But I think sort of mentality wise, he's got the broad shoulders to handle a big occasion. He's just not played an awful lot of football, so that part of it would be the only concern for me, and ultimately leads me to think that Harry Clark, who was involved in that League One promotion push last season, so he's got that kind of muscle memory to call upon, which I think is going to be so big for all of the team. I think it would be him for Leif. So it doesn't sound great, does it, from what Kieran McKenna said, that he was limping pretty heavily, he's rolled his ankle, it's an injury that he's had before earlier in the season, but there's been other times where we thought that Leif wouldn't play, and he's like so many of them, really robust and seems to be able to kind of keep going. So touch wood, fingers crossed he can play.
Right, Ross, I'm going to ask you the question I tried to pin Stu down on earlier, but I'm going to pin you both down on it now. All things being equal, we don't know the state of Nathan Broadhead. We don't know if Wes Burns is ready to go again. But in the perfect dream scenario, Broadhead on the left, Burns on the right, do we now say Amari's got to start, so we are dropping Connor Chaplin? In that scenario, what do you do, Ross?
Oh, bloody hell. Bloody hell, mate. What you done to me? What you done to me?
I'll put you on the spot there. Just tell me what you think.
Do you know what? I thought Chaplin had a good game against Hull, actually. I thought he had one of his better games in his recent month. But Connor Chaplin is so important to the team as well. So, no. Oh, I'll still start, you know, Amari. I know I'm going, you know, ignoring your question. Maybe don't start Burns this one and put Amari on the right and then, Chaplin in the middle. But, I'm just not answering your question.
You've kind of thrown it off there. But I respect it. Stu, Ross has taken a slightly cowardly way out there. In that scenario, this is what I want to get to, though. In that scenario, you've got Broadhead on the left, Burns on the right. They're both going to start.
Mm-hmm.
And then you feel like you have to get Amari in the side somewhere. And we know that Chaplin has maybe not been in the best of form recently. Are we at a stage now where you say, sorry, Connor, we got to play Amari?
I think in a scenario, let's take a scenario where let's just imagine everybody is fully fit.
Yeah.
Going into this game,
exactly,
which
that.
Obviously there's the Burns sort of question mark over that, and Broadhead as well, of course. It sounds like that was only a knock, it was described as, so he should be back in contention for this one. But if all three were fit, I'd be inclined to go with Amari on the left, if I'm honest. I think Broadhead might be the one that would miss out in that scenario. I might be keeping Broadhead up my sleeve for Huddersfield, because I think they're going to be a more deep-lying team. And I think that's where Broadhead's sort of little silky touches come into play a little bit. And but for an away game, where I think that dynamism, that athleticism, that pace, I quite like Amari on the left. Some of his big moments, some of his big goal-scoring moments, if you look back, have come. I think the Southampton game, he was on the left. There's a few others where seems to have come from there. So, yeah, in answer to your question, Burns, Chaplin, Hutchinson, I think would be, you know, in an ideal world, the three going into this game. But there is that question mark over Wes Burns. Maybe Sarmiento, if Broadhead, you know, even if Broadhead is fit, there's a question, there's a an argument that Sarmiento would be better suited to this game. I thought he was really good when he came on. I've mentioned Jack Taylor, who is also a shout for the number 10 role. We've said it all season. He likes playing further forward. And he's looked better whenever he's come on in those more advanced roles. And he's someone who's got a goal in him as well, for sure. So I think he's part of the conversation going into this game as well for those three behind the striker. So isn't it nice that we're talking about all these great options that Kieran McKenna's got going into some big games, and conversely, Mark Robbins is talking about being sort of thin on the ground and might have to play a few. So it's the position you want to be in going into this game, for sure.
Neither of you have answered my question. You've just thrown more names back at me. But I think broadly speaking, we're all in agreement that Amari has to start somewhere. I think that's what we're saying, right?
Yes. If you want me to predict the team for Tuesday night?
No, I don't want you to predict the team. I'm just interested in that trade-off between Amari and Chaplin, that's all. But it's fine. You've answered it with your thoughts in a different direction. I like it. I'm just a stickler for answering questions, that's all. We can move on. Should we move on to predictions?
Yeah.
Excellent. I've wound Watson up. No. Ross. No,
you have not.
You have not wound me up. Start smacking the side of it.
I don't know how else you want me to answer it. Who is a better player?
Listen. Let's we've all had a drink. Let's all calm down. Essentially, Amari needs to start. I think that's basically just what I want. Let's all agree on that. Amari needs to start. However it happens, Amari needs to start tomorrow night. Shall we talk about predictions? Because Ross, you boldly predicted a win. The rest of us predicted draws. I wish I'd have been bold and said 3-3. I actually uttered that phrase on Friday when AJ had stolen the 2-2. We all got draws. I think AJ actually also got the first goal scorer because he switched it to Hurst when Moore... Who did he say originally? There was a player that wasn't actually in the
Broadhead
11. Broadhead. So, yeah, in that scenario, he gets to pick another first goal scorer, doesn't he?
Did he message me?
Can I have George Hurst? Maybe he thought he was messaging that to the wider group. That was shortly after I told him he was fired, though, to be fair. so I think it's as we were, isn't it? AJ's basically won the league.
He's won the league.
It's literally just whether me or Stu finishes in the bottom spot and is relegated to another newspaper somewhere.
4 foot.
Yeah. Yeah. So what were we saying then? Do you want me to start, Stu? Shall I start?
There's so much at stake here now. I feel like we should almost be putting these kind of in blind.
Like this?
Yeah. Go on then.
Should we let Ross go first? Because he's got second. He knows he's playing Champions League football. What are you saying, Ross? And then me and Stu can fight it out.
Technically, if you get yours, if you get at maximum points on the board, Heathy, you could actually take over me. If I, you know, don't
really
basically have an absolute
what both yeah, games, if you get, I absolutely nailed yeah. both games, so that's not gonna happen.
Yeah, 10 points, and if I don't know, just have an absolute mare with my predictions. So basically, if I predict us Town to lose basically their next two games, which I'm not gonna do, obviously, then you could potentially take over me. But
that would be controversial, wouldn't it?
It would be.
Give us your prediction, then, Ross. What are you saying for this one?
Ooh, could it be another Barnsley away, eh? We thought the whole City game was going to be Barnsley away. Could this be? I'm doing it, lads. I'm going to do it. It's going to be another Barnsley away. Maybe not 3-0, but let's go. Let's just go 1-0. 1-0 win. And who will score the goal? Who will put the ball into the net? Connor Chaplin.
Ah, after all we've spoken about. 1-0 Connor Chaplin. I'm going to say draw. Because I don't know, it just feels to me like this season's going to, the most dramatic possible outcome would be, well, I suppose it's not the most dramatic possible outcome, but certainly Town needing to win on the final day feels like that's the way this season is going to end. So I'm going to say draw, which I'll be, you know, as long as they don't get beaten, that's the main thing. So I'm going to say, I'll say 1-1. And I will say Amari Hutchinson. Just because he's all right, isn't he? He's a good player. Why not? To use Ross's thinking. So, Stu, I've given you an open goal there. I've said draw. Are you gonna go for the win?
I'm gonna go for the win.
Yes. Yeah,
I was gonna say that regardless. I'll say 2-0 Ipswich Town.
Nice.
Yeah.
Who's gonna score first?
It's really hard to pick who's going to start, isn't it? Jeremy Sarmiento.
Ooh. That is left field, literally. So we've got 1-1 from me. We've got 2-0 from Stu. We've got 1-0 from Ross. We just allow ourselves to consider, friends, before we end this show, if that scenario plays out, Ross and Stu are right. Ipswich Town win at Coventry on Saturday. They only need to draw with relegated Huddersfield at Portman Road to be promoted to the Premier League, friends. Promoted to the Premier League, back-to-back promotions. Un-effing believable, Stu. Can you imagine? Can you allow yourself to think of that scenario sitting there in the press box on Saturday with that scenario in front of you?
Yes and no, because it's the only thing that's occupied anyone's minds associated with Ipswich Town for several weeks now, these various permutations and how things could unfold. So, yeah, you're kind of thinking about it all the time, but also not allowing yourself to think about it because it's like you're tempting fate and it's, you know, just thinking, well, let's just deal with the next game. There's a scenario, as you say, where Ipswich could go into that game needing a point. They could also lose tomorrow night and go into it hoping Leeds mess up and it could be a really nervy day. So incredible, isn't it? I'm just trying to get our head around everything that's unfolding. The Leeds result on Friday night was massive because there was one thing that I felt, if I'm honest, there was one thing I felt quite certain of, is that Ipswich wouldn't be able to win their final three games. When everyone was going, it's in Ipswich's hands. All they've got to do is win their final three. And I'm thinking, Holloway, Coventry away, Huddersfield at home. I'm not sure 9 points as good as Ipswich are. And I just thought that it needed Leeds to slip up once. And I thought that slip up was the Middlesbrough game, where that was most likely. And when they were able to be 1-0 down, it go back to 2-2. And for them to win that game, that felt, I didn't really want to say it out loud at the time. That felt like a major body blow. And then when that QPR result unfolded the way I did, you think, okay, maybe it's just meant to be. But que sera sera, it's going to have been an incredible season, whatever happens. And I'm sure we talk about how quickly some people have been able to get their head around the disappointment of Saturday night. I mean, when the season is all done and dusted, if it doesn't go the way we hope, that's going to be a whole other conversation about how quickly you're able to kind of settle your emotions, and we'll be able to have that chat. Well, hopefully, we won't have to have that conversation, eh?
I can't even start to think about that. I mean, obviously, it looks like Norwich is going to finish fifth now. So, if in a dreadful world, Town were consigned to the playoffs, that Norwich clash would be in the final. At Wembley. Oh, God.
We can play Huddersfield again, yeah. I mean, we're talking about how much we enjoyed that game. They're still very much in that top six mix going into the last
game. Do you mean Hull? Game.
Hull, I mean, not Huddersfield. That would be mad.
Yeah. Ross, anything else from you before we draw a line under this one and get mentally prepared to be sent to Coventry tomorrow?
No, just, I know people are probably sick of me saying it, but just
you're going to say enjoy it.
Yeah, just enjoy it because, no one predicted this, you know, start of the season. So going up to Sunderland away, you know, when we got that win, we thought, oh, good start to the championship. And now we're here at the end of April going to Coventry, basically knowing if we've won, we just need a point against Huddersfield, who already got relegated, as you mentioned. So, next two games, there'll be a lot of Town fans who have never seen this team in the top flight of English football. So I'm sure they can't wait. And Saturday is going to be an absolute party, hopefully. So bring it on.
Almost a quarter of a century, friends. A quarter of a century since Town were last in the top flight. Extraordinary stuff. Right then, just a reminder to support our sponsors. Use the code KOA at manscaped.com for 20% off and free delivery on all the excellent clobber. You can also get yourself, talking of excellent clobber, you can get yourself some KOA merch The link is on all our socials. I think there's one day left in the 15% off offer. So if you're quick on this Monday, you can treat yourself to that for the run-in. And also, obviously, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes if you can, because it just helps lift us visibility-wise in the charts, helps more people find us. And also follow us across all social medias, Kings of Anglia on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, X, and TikTok. Got to remember TikTok, because that's the one we're pushing right now. AJ's leading that one. Friends, the next time we speak, we will know exactly what Ipswich Town need to do on Saturday against Huddersfield. We already know they're going to be playing for a place in the Premier League next season, whatever happens. Unbelievable times. We'll speak to you next time.